Canuck Central Victoria Day. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah with you for a couple of hours here on Sportsnet 650 and on your favorite podcatcher. You can always listen on demand if you can't catch us live, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe, that way you never miss any of our exclusive interviews, inside info, and my bad takes at least. Also, leave a review while you're there. Review the bad takes. Five stars means they're exceptionally bad. That's the way you do it.
Just leave a review. It's fine. Say whatever you want.
Canuck Central is presented by your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. It's always nice when you come into the studio and you flip into the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, Sat, and everybody's talking about me for some reason. I don't even know what happened.
So I believe, and I can be corrected, I stand to be corrected on this, but the show prior to us,
yes,
the show that shall not be named, may have been dragging you. So that would be my guess.
What else is new? I feel like Faber played a John Marino soundbite. That got everybody going.
Probably.
May have happened. Chris Faber behind the glass today. Josh Elliott Wolf producing this fine program. So I guess we kind of knew this was coming after Bruce Boudreaux spoke last week, Sat, but the Canucks officially announced some changes to the coaching staff, including Scott Walker. Now, I'm not sure why there was so much, discussion about this, but Boudreaux pretty clearly on the Bob McCowan podcast last week said Scott Walker would be retiring and stepping away from the Vancouver Canucks. So this was not any sort of firing, at least from Scott Walker's perspective.
No, and that was very clear that he was going to retire. And even when Scott Walker took the job, the reason many of us thought it was unlikely to begin with for Scott Walker to join the Canucks was he has other interests. He has the OHL team. He's got family there. He's got a lot of ties going on. And there's a lot invested for Scott Walker for him to get up out of that situation long term. So it never made sense for him to even come to Vancouver, but I guess to be with Boudreaux and do it for half a season or just over half a season, that was fine. So I guess that shouldn't really come as a big surprise. And one thing we both wondered, because, you know, I did kind of mention last week that Boudreaux was probably not supposed to make those announcements. And one of the reasons he wasn't supposed to make those announcements, you know, we kind of mentioned was the potential of other moves coming and that they want to make a general announcement for who's coming back and who's not coming back for the coaching staff. And the fact that Boudreaux mentioned that Scott Walker's not coming back, I think kind of led to that announcement coming out on a Sunday the way it did yesterday. So I think one of the things about how it all came to be was made a bit awkward because of Boudreaux letting it slip about Scott Walker. But yes, you're right. Scott Walker did not get fired. He stepped aside.
So there's a couple of things that come out of this that are interesting. Bradshaw and Jason King are remaining with the team. We wondered about that. But Kyle Gustafson and video coach Daryl Seward are not returning to the team for the 2023 season. And then there is a quote from Patrick Alvin in the release. "We are pleased with our current coaching staff and look forward to expanding on the momentum they built last year," leading many to believe or wonder, Sat, if that means there are no further additions coming to the coaching staff.
I don't believe that necessarily means there won't be other additions being made. Now, I don't know how far they want to expand the video stuff, whether they want to hire somebody else or they think they can do that in-house differently or something else. I'm not quite sure. But I do think there's still a decent chance they hire another assistant coach at some point. But I think it's going to have to be the right person. And I think that it would likely have to be somebody that Boudreaux also wants. So that may take a little bit of time. It could be one of those things that kind of depends on the head coaching carousel and how those things kind of fall into place. And then all of a sudden, there could be a pretty good candidate for the assistant who was left on the outside looking in after not getting a head coaching job potentially. So I think give it a little bit of time and see what happens. I mentioned Scott Stevens being something that Boudreaux has wanted to work with in the past. We'll see if that's something they explore or that's something that, you know, Scott Stevens would have have any interest in. But I think we have to give that a little bit of time, especially with the head coaching scene all around the league not being figured out, that there could still be something that happens for the Canucks coaching staff in, in the next few weeks to months.
The one thing I do wonder about, Boudreaux is, picked up the option. He's on an expiring deal. I believe Bradshaw's on an expiring deal. You know, Jason King, this is his first NHL coaching gig. So, there's not a lot of long-term tied in to this current coaching staff. And would you want to keep that alike across the board until you're ready to make a commitment with your current coaching staff? That would be the one wonder I have about adding anybody else.
Yeah, I don't think that really gets in the way, though, necessarily, right? Because, I mean, as much as you're making the commitment, I mean, all those roles are defined. All those guys coming back, they have very defined roles, right? Bradshaw, he's running the PK and the defense. Jason King, he's running the power play. Ian Clark, what does he do? Well, he's the goalie coach. I think it's very well defined. I mean, is there not room for somebody else to either do video work and do some other work there? I think there's still room there for them to have somebody else involved with the team.
So we'll see how this all plays out. Now, ahead of the show, and even last night as I'm watching Battle of Alberta and Evander Kane scores the seventh fastest natural hat trick in Stanley Cup playoff history. You know, just as an aside, I find stats to be hilarious these days. Because, like, there's always, like, some kind of caveat, you know, like, oh, Connor McDavid is the first player in NHL history to have multi-point games in 9 of his first 10 playoff games of a season. Like, who's tracking that? I don't even, I don't know. It just doesn't, it's cool, but it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me that somebody would be tracking that. Anyways.
You can always find stats for anything. You know what I mean? Like, if you look hard enough, you can always find some new, wonderful stat. I mean, it all depends on what the context look at it within, right?
100%. I find some of them funny. Like, you know, when you throw, like, 7 different caveats on something, of course it's going to be the first time ever it's happened. Okay. I'll digress from that.
Quick sidebar, I guess. Yes.
So Evander Kane scores a hat trick in a few minutes' time. Flames really were not very good against that Oilers top line, as we know. And, you know, I tweet out the number of Kane and how he has now scored, after he completed the hat trick, 32 goals in 53 games as an Edmonton Oiler. Pretty good, I'd say, right? I start getting a load of mentions about Jim Rutherford and the Canucks made a mistake not signing this player, not trying to add him to their playoff run. And I'm, you know, part of me is like, how much of this is revisionist history? Because I don't remember too many people yelling from the top of Grouse Mountain that the Canucks should be signing Evander Kane after he got let go by the Sharks in January. It feels like, oh, well, look at how good he's playing now. Of course the Canucks should have signed him.
Yeah, I mean, there was zero push from Canucks fans. I mean, there's a few people that mentioned sign him. I mean, there's always some people that kind of mention now, but there was no, you know, grand push for the Canucks to sign Evander Kane. It never made sense for them to do so either. I mean, bringing Evander Kane and everything going on with him was the last thing this team needed at the time. Yeah. And then not to mention, just ethically, is that a guy you should be going after? Not to mention things. That's a question unto itself. And it was something that the previous regime was staying clear of when he became available with San Jose before the changes were made or suggestions of him being available. And, you know, the whole trade stuff about, you know, teams willing to take him for half the salary, all that sort of stuff. Vancouver under the previous regime had no interest in doing so. And obviously the current regime didn't go after him either. And then there's tons of things just morally, ethically, all that sort of stuff. But look at it just pragmatically as well. Now, if you want to make the argument to just make the playoffs or whatever, I mean, that's the flimsiest yet the only argument anybody can make for it, because it's not a long-term play anyways. And forget everything. Even if you like him as a hockey player, is he a guy you feel comfortable with signing to a multi-year deal?
No.
So what's the point of him coming in halfway through the season? Help you maybe make the playoffs? Then he walks and goes elsewhere? Like, there's no upshot here. He's not a guy you're signing. He's not a guy you're extending, not to mention everything else. I mean, I've seen some of the people mention in your mentions, Dan. Like, I'm really surprised that just because he's had a hot playoffs, all of a sudden people are bringing up the Canucks should have signed him. Like, I don't see that at all. It made no sense. Not then, not now.
Now, I did pose the question just ahead of us going on air via Twitter, at @DanRicho_, and those listening live can text in with their thoughts, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. There are a lot more now that are saying absolutely not. The Canucks should not have made that kind of a move for Evander Kane. And I think it's hard to land on the other side of the argument, as you just so well put it, Sat. I don't know how many situations in the league would have been there wasn't a better fit for Evander Kane to begin rebuilding his value around the league than landing with the Edmonton Oilers. Now, from a strictly on-ice perspective, he's put in the work, he's played well, he hasn't been a distraction, he's added a physicality and obviously an extra goal scorer to that roster, which they've desperately needed at a cost Ken Holland was very willing to pay, considering he refused to go out and pay for a goalie or pretty much anything else to aid his roster down the stretch of this season. But it's worked out brilliantly. And to look at his playoff numbers, he's got two hat tricks now, one in the series against LA and obviously the one last night. But this line of him, Draisaitl, and Evander Kane came together almost by accident, Sat. Like, it wasn't something that Jay Woodcroft planned. It's something that he was almost forced to do because Leon Draisaitl just could not carry his own line with the injury that he is currently holding. Then you throw Evander Kane on there, and he's just getting a bunch of tap-ins. Like, what did he do last night? He was basically alley-oops to Evander Kane right at the net front from either McDavid or Draisaitl. They're just, look, as much as I can see people are jumping on the hype train for Evander Kane, and maybe he does get a multi-year deal from somebody in the league this summer, which I still wonder how many teams would actually be interested in doing that. There wasn't a more perfect situation for Evander Kane to land in than the Edmonton Oilers.
I mean, obviously not. I mean, not to mention playing with McDavid and Draisaitl to put up all those points and everything like that. Also, a team that was in so much disarray and had so many problems that him coming in kind of flew under the radar a little bit. People weren't even, they're so mad about other things and other concerns that the Evander Kane thing wasn't that big of an issue. Plus, it's Edmonton, it kind of flies under the radar. People kind of forgot about it. It really was an ideal situation. I don't see that working. And I think what shows more than anything else, like not working in Vancouver for the Edmonton Oilers, though. I mean, look at that. I mean, one of the biggest questions people had was, do the Edmonton Oilers have as much scoring depth as the Calgary Flames do? And I keep looking at both these teams, Dan, and I keep kind of wondering to myself, okay, like, let's grant for sure that McDavid is the best player in the series. There's no doubt. McDavid and Draisaitl, they're your two, you know, superstar type of players. Well, they have Goudreau, Lindholm, and Tkachuk. So they have three guys, right? And I still take McDavid and Draisaitl over those three guys, but they have three of those guys. But then after you go past those three guys Calgary has, you look at Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, mm-hmm. Zach Hyman, how much he's playing better, plus Evander Kane. I mean, how dissimilar is that from the next three best players the Calgary Flames have after their top three guys? Like, it's not that dissimilar. And I'd even say Brett Kulak on the back end was a really sneaky, nice pickup for Edmonton, because I think he defends better than anybody on Calgary right now.
Yeah.
So you look at that team, and I understand that Calgary still has overall more depth and better goaltending and all that sort of stuff. But they added Evander Kane, they added Brett Kulak. And for as much as people talk about Edmonton not being as good as Calgary, not as deep as Calgary, there isn't that much that's separating them once you start really looking at their rosters and go a bit deeper outside those top three players Calgary has.
I feel almost ashamed of myself for forgetting about Brett Kulak, who's been one of my favorite players out of Montreal. Like, you know, a guy that I've touted a few times on this station. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, he's a great, like, cost-effective option, sometimes playing lower down the lineup in Montreal, that sort of thing. And he's proven himself well in Edmonton, especially, you know, Nurse is not playing at 100%. Keith hasn't played well enough, but Kulak has certainly brought something that the Oilers desperately needed on the back end. And, you know, the Oilers are kind of doing exactly what the formula is that they need to do to win. And that is don't get beat too badly outside of the McDavid line, right? It's like a basketball team throwing out their second unit and being like, all right, guys, like, just don't lose by double digits until we get the starters back out there, right? And that's kind of what Edmonton has done basically since the 2-0 goal for Calgary in game two. Now, everything looked bleak at that point. Richie scores that really super easy goal, terrible rebound from Mike Smith that he just leaves right out there in front of the net. Nobody is there guarding Richie. It was just like, okay, we're just leaving the front of the net open. I see how it's going right now for the Oilers. But since then, they've played a lot better defensively, I think, throughout their group. And obviously, McDavid has just turned it up to, I mean, just the nth degree. I've never seen a player dominate the way that McDavid is dominating right now, even beyond the points. I mean, the way he is just embarrassing guys almost on a shift-by-shift basis. I almost feel bad for Eric Branson being put in this spot. No Chris Tanev in the lineup, and there's Goody getting caught out there against McDavid almost all the time, it seems like, and getting roasted time after time. He wouldn't be the only guy doing that, but it's certainly not a matchup that anybody would think Eric Branson could win at any sort of a rate that is going to be good enough for the Calgary Flames. I don't know what you're supposed to do, because McDavid is just that good right now. Sad. You have to just throw up your hands and say, like, I hope we get some saves, because there's no way we're stopping this guy right now.
I mean, so many thoughts went through my mind watching McDavid the last few days. It's like, part of it was, okay, so how do the Canucks match up against McDavid if they face him in the postseason? They're going to be in the same division for the foreseeable future. Like, how do you go about, you know, addressing that? I mean, the other part of it is, you can't build your team to fight one guy or one squad. I mean, and Rutherford himself talked about that and all that sort of stuff. But it is inevitable that if you are going to make the playoffs, that you would probably face McDavid at some point if you want to be a contender in this division. But I don't know if there's anything you can do. Look at the LA Kings. They had Anze Kopitar, who's as big and strong and as good as a two-way center as you can find in the National Hockey League. Mm-hmm. And Philippe Deneau, who you call the modern-day Guy Carboneau.
I stand by that.
Now, Deneau's not a massive guy, not super fast or whatever, but still like a good defensive type of player. Those guys had no chance against McDavid.
Mm-hmm.
Do you even, like, can you even do anything about that? I think the only thing you can do is make your team as good as possible. Yeah. I think that's the only thing you can do. It's like that you hope that you have a team that ends up being kind of like the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Colorado Avalanche, that you're just so powerful that it overcomes the greatest player on the planet deciding to go supernova in the postseason against you. That's the only bet you have, because there's nothing you can do as a single matchup or a single guy. That's why I kind of laugh at the whole Chris Tanev stuff. Yes, historically in the regular season, Tanev had a good record against McDavid, but the postseason is a different animal, and what McDavid is doing now is different from what he's faced in the regular season. Like, get the Tanev stuff out of here. Sure, he'll be a bit better, but he ain't stopping Connor. Like, let's not get it twisted. That's how dominant this guy is. So there isn't a single guy, a single defenseman, or a single center, or a single winger that can neutralize McDavid. You just better hope your team's just better than McDavid's team.
There isn't a player in the league that can defend him the way that he's playing right now. You know, and it's that simple. It's, you know, what we've seen from Giannis Antetokounmpo at times in the NBA in recent years. You know, like, they're just completely, he is just completely unplayable the way that he is going right now. And even those that cover the team in Edmonton and watched him all year and said he should be the guy that wins the Hart over Austin Matthews, and there was the big, you know, McDavid versus, well, it wasn't even that big. You know, Matthews just completely overshadowed it because he scored 60 goals this year. And whatever side of the conversation you land on doesn't entirely matter, because even that comparison, McDavid has seemingly, by all accounts, taken his game to another level. And one big factor, I think, in this, and as we watch McDavid's best playoff performance to date, last year, Sat, in that series where they got swept by the Winnipeg Jets, McDavid did not draw one penalty. And I think the tone that the NHL and the officials set early in this postseason is really starting to show here, because, you know, they weren't letting anything go. They were calling a lot of stick infractions, calling every little cross check. They called everything. And we complained about it. Tons of power plays, game in, game out. But you know what it did? Now you know, and Calgary doesn't want to take penalties. We know that. If we try to slow them down any which way, we're going down a man. And I think it's factored in to how McDavid is seemingly more free to do things in this postseason than maybe he was last year against the Winnipeg Jets.
I think that's a part of it too, and you got to give Woodcroft credit for just saying, just completely, you do whatever you want and go out there and just do whatever you want. And I know he's finding a pretty good balance right now of being selfish and getting his shot off and also finding, you know, open players and all that sort of stuff and sharing the wealth. But I almost think he's better when he's more selfish and when he goes after it a bit more. And as much as, yes, you want to get power plays, you have more of a chance to score there when you have McDavid and all that, mm-hmm. the way he's playing, at even strength, it's an absolute monster. You almost get better matchups sometimes, especially on home ice, depending on who's out there. And man, like, I understand why you're splitting up Zadorov and Gudbranson because everything else going on. But you know what that does? That means you have two different pairs where he has a guy that he can absolutely turn style whenever the hell he wants. So when you have last change and you gotta play your other defenseman, I almost like McDavid at even strength better at times because of what matchup you can get and how he just takes over whenever he wants. So, man, like, I don't know if there's anything Calgary can do right now unless McDavid just kind of goes cold or just decides like, yeah, I've run too hot. I got to take a break or whatever. There's nothing they can do. There's no matchup they can build. There's no player they have. There's nothing they can do to slow down McDavid.
Well, they got to get their top guys going, right? Like Gaudreau,
that's the only thing.
Tkachuk, Lindholm. That line has been pretty quiet the last two games. Those guys absolutely have to get going. You can't beat the Oilers with the way McDavid's going right now if your top line has just gone absolutely invisible. Now, remember the first series, too. Edmonton went up 2-1 in that one, and you wondered, okay, is this where McDavid kind of continues to take over? And then LA flipped the script and won the next two, putting the Oilers on the brink of elimination. Look, Calgary is by no means out of this. But those two things, you know, right now the Oilers are getting better goaltending. That's obvious. And Calgary's top line has basically been absent since game one. And without Tanev in this lineup, without any sort of visible way that they are going to be able to slow down Connor McDavid right now, they need those two things to really start going if they are going to get back into this series.
Yeah, and Johnny Gaudreau is dynamic. There's a lot of things he does well. He is not getting enough support, I don't think.
Yeah.
In general. Like, I think he's doing pretty good. I still think there are areas that he can get better, but I mean, he's drawing penalties, he's being shifty, he's creating chances. I think he's doing about as much as he can do. This should be Matthew Tkachuk's game, this type of series. And I know he had the hat trick and he's had moments, but he is a guy that if you're looking to pay a guy, you know, 9 to 10 million, and that's what he's probably looking to get paid, and he's coming off a 100-point season, these are the types of matchups where he's going to have to come up big. You know what I mean? And as good as Elias Lindholm is, he's talented. When does he take over on his own? And those are the types of things they need from those guys. Like, who's going to have a moment? I mean, you're not going to be able to outdo McDavid, but you need each one of those guys to be able to do something special pretty much every night. And right now, they're not getting that.
A lot of thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text line about the Evander Kane conversation. We'll get to some of those texts here on a Victoria Day Monday. And also, Frank Saravalli is going to join us, our Monday Hockey Insider. That is coming up next on Canuck Central. Canuck Central presented by your local Grip Auto and Tire, location friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. Listening live and coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, Anthony in White Rock. Canuck should have signed Kane. He's a great player. Jake in Port Moody. Kane is not a team first guy. Johnny Mack. Forget about the GM, the best player in the world lobbied to sign Kane. Last night, McDavid praised Kane on both his offensive talent, but also his 10-hit physical play. Those are some takes coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I understand why some people want Evander Kane and all that sort of stuff because of, you know, him being, you know, a talented hockey player that can score and all that sort of stuff. But it was never going to make sense here, number one. And then from the other ethical or moral side of it and all those sort of things, there's so many question marks. It's just the last thing this organization needed. You can find other good players. And even people that like Evander Kane or want him here, I don't think anybody feels comfortable signing him to a big-time contract or signing him to a contract with any sort of term on it. So to me, it's not really anything of interest. And if I'm looking at why he's having as much success as he is in Edmonton, is a lot of things that you kind of mentioned, is playing with McDavid and Draisaitl, all those sort of things. And I'm sure it'll help his value to go elsewhere. But for Vancouver specifically, it never made any sense.
Yeah, and that's pretty much why the Canucks are looking in different directions, trying to add an Andre Kuzmenko. Maybe he is their bargain signing that helps out the team quite a bit if they're able to get that one done. Of course, there will be competition for his signature, though. Let's bring in our next guest. He is our Monday Hockey Insider. It's Frank Saravalli. Thanks for this, Frank. How's it going?
Hello, boys. What's going on?
You know, just churning the wheel here on a holiday Monday up in Canada. And
Canada. I've been in Alberta for a week.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of time to be spending in Alberta. Are you okay? Is everything all right?
I'm good. You know what? It was pretty awesome to see last night. Long weekend, early 6 p.m. start, Connor McDavid in pure video game mode, and the city of Edmonton is just, they're recovering today. They needed to hydrate.
Well, they did, and I mean, we were just talking about Evander Kane, and some Canucks fans have been kind of mentioning, you know, Canucks should have gone after him or whatever and all this sort of stuff. But just watching him having success with the Edmonton Oilers right now, does this change anything for him? Like, was this enough for him to all of a sudden people forget about his past, he gets another big contract? Or do you think even if he's having good postseason and all that sort of stuff, it's going to be hard for him to get his as far as money goes?
I don't think it's going to be difficult to get money. I think it's going to be difficult to get term. I mean, think about the narrative when he went to San Jose. He arrives and I guess Jumbo picks him up at the airport, who, by the way, is in for game four tonight. And they have this long thing, and Evander signs this long-term contract, and there's all these statements, bold proclamations made by the Sharks saying, hey, Evander Kane's different. He's changed. He's been a great teammate. We're so excited about, you know, having him. What a great player. No one's ever questioned Evander Kane, the hockey player. But really, the big question is about Evander Kane off the ice as a teammate and as a person. And there's been many of those questions raised in a lot of different markets. And the Oilers have said all the right things. Kane has done all the right things. But I just think the fact that he's continued to produce and has been a fantastic player is to the shock of no one. He was the Sharks' best player last year, yet was such a detriment that they weren't bringing him back this season, and in fact tried to use every manner possible to cut ties with him, which we'll see in a hearing over these next few weeks to finally determine, you know, what their cap situation is and any penalties, if possible, moving forward. Someone will pay Evander Kane. I just don't think it'll be for a long-term deal, knowing that, you know, this, you know, part of that same stuff may be waiting on the other end of it.
It's also, I don't mean to diminish, you know, the guy who scored 10 goals already in this playoff campaign, a goal a game to this point, but like, the kind of tap-ins he was getting last night. I know you wrote about the line and how it kind of came together by accident with McDavid, Draisaitl, and Evander Kane over a daily face-off. But, I mean, it just feels like almost anybody could play with Connor McDavid and pop in a few goals right now.
Yeah, I kind of made the joke myself, like the way Leon Draisaitl and McDavid have dropped dimes on his stick, like, you know, I could probably do that at some point. You could as well.
Just got to get to the spot.
Still,
that's it.
It still takes some legit finish, though, from Evander Kane. And I think if one thing that has oozed out of these playoffs is it's just his confidence. Like, he's a supremely confident player and person, and I think it's made him that confidence has made him such a big, you know, big time player as well. He's a talented guy. There's never been any question about that. And he's a smart guy. He's just gotten in his own way more often than not.
I mean, he absolutely has. But right now, that Edmonton team, I know they're only up 2-1 here against the Calgary Flames, but does it not almost feel like they have the Flames on the ropes here?
Well, it does, because the Flames have had no answer for that top line. I mean, you mentioned it, 55 points combined in 10 games. You've got the two leading point getters in the playoffs, and they're flanked on the wing with Kane and the guy who's leading the playoffs in goals. And he's just, that line, McDavid has taken it to the next level, and Draisaitl, always going to be the Malkin to Crosby, hasn't gotten necessarily the respect and attention I think he deserves in light of McDavid for how good he's been. 19 points in 10 playoff games, doing it on one leg. Like, that high ankle sprain is no joke. And he's gotten better and better. You know, he certainly looks more powerful. And until the Flames find a way to answer, and maybe they will in game four, by, I would imagine they're going to try and dumb it down as much as possible, slow it down, make it a brutal slog to get through. But they don't have an answer for that line, and it's changed the series, that trio being together. They've been unstoppable, and they don't, until they come up with an answer for it, I think the Oilers are holding the keys to the series.
Well, and I do appreciate the way Jay Woodcroft has kind of changed things up, especially after game one, and, you know, quick shifting McDavid, trying to get him out there against Gudbranson if he can, and just find ways to get him out against the lower parts of Calgary's lineup. And it's certainly a lot easier when you're playing at home and you have the last change. But kind of feels like Jay Woodcroft has gotten the better of Daryl Sutter these last couple of games.
You know, it's funny. I think a lot of these talking points or narratives that we went into the season with, or the series with, have really been flipped on their head. One of them yeah. was that. It was Woodcroft going against the wily veteran in Sutter, and how would that work? And I think perhaps we kind of underestimated the experience that Woodcroft has had working under coaches that have been on deep playoff runs. Like, he's been in those coaches' rooms for, you know, 17 years now, you know, listening to Mike Babcock and listening to Todd McClellan and others. He's been in interesting spots to pick up little bits and pieces along the way. The other one has been Markstrom against Smith, you know, and then the other one that I think has changed in a big way over these last couple games has been better team going against best player. And that first line has had such a big part to do with it. And obviously the play of Markstrom has been questionable at times, but, you know, I don't know that we necessarily got it right. You know, I'm just looking at some of the pre-series predictions and reading in Pierre LeBrun's column in The Athletic, saying he talked to 11 executives and all 11 picked the Flames to win the series. Either we all don't know what we're talking about, or Edmonton has done such a good job of taking it to Calgary, dictating the pace and style of the game and making them play that way, that it's really changed everything.
Well, I think that's part of it. And I also think just McDavid going off the way he has is the most dominant performance we've seen in the postseason in a long time. Like, we've seen, you know, Sidney Crosby be dominant for an entire playoffs, but as far as dominating two rounds, I don't think we've seen anything quite like McDavid right now. And if he's going to be like this every time in the postseason, what can anybody do to slow him down? Like, we were just talking about, like, what can the Canucks do? I don't think there's a single player on any position you can find in the league that can slow down McDavid. Like, what's your best bet? Just have an overwhelming team that's just better?
I think that's it. It's trying to take advantage of the Oilers when McDavid's off the ice. And the thing is, they've gotten pretty good contributions from some of the other guys in their lineup. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has really rebounded over the last two games since a tough game one. They've gotten some physicality and some toughness from some other players along the way. Their defense has been pretty good at getting the puck out of their own end. They've gotten the stops from Mike Smith. The Oilers' biggest weakness has always been, you know, they're the best team in the league when McDavid's on the ice, and they're one of the worst when he's off of it. And so They found, as you mentioned, creative ways to get him out in different matchups, play him double shift, do lots of different things to move pieces around the chessboard to try and keep the Flames off their off balance and off their game. But you know what we're seeing now, he's authoring one of the greatest hockey stories, playoff stories we've ever seen. We're three games into the second round and he's already outscored most of the playoff leaders from entire postseasons in the last two decades. 2003, 2007, 2011, 2012, 2015, 2017. He'd be leading the playoffs already in all of those postseasons. And so it's bananas to think about. It's even more appreciative. I'm even more appreciative of seeing it in person, watching him wind up and go and even play in a way in which he hasn't really before. There's new wrinkles that he's added, even in this series. You know, we've seen the edge work before, but the cutbacks and sharp turns that he's used and, you know, finding a way to, you know, to get around guys and using all the space that he can on the ice, you know, even at times up near the blue line, like it's been insane to watch. And the Oilers, you know, what he's doing now is like an NBA type playoff run for a star. The difference is those guys are on the court for the entire 48 minutes and McDavid is on the bench for more than half the game.
If we got Edmonton, Colorado, it's basically like Doncic versus the Warriors. You know, it's kind of a similar matchup like we're seeing in the NBA right now. But
you know, can you think of anything better for the game than that?
Not right now. I mean, between like you essentially would have like three of the top five players in the game: McKinnon, Makar, and McDavid. Certainly three of the top 10,
mm-hmm.
all in one series. That would be amazing for the game. But you know,
got to get there.
Yeah,
They're gonna get the best punch from the Calgary Flames in Game Four. I think that they're gonna be able to handle.
Well,
and
we saw what they did in Game Four against LA. They just laid a complete egg, so they can't do that again.
That's actually my story for tomorrow that I'm sitting here typing right now for DailyFaceoff.com. Is the Oilers are saying all the right things about learning their lesson from Game Four. And you know, I had some friends and colleagues that I work with at Oilers Nation that were in LA, and they were like, you know, we're down by the glass watching warmups for Game Four, and they're like, Cody Ceci looks like a tomato. Like, he got so much sun in between Games Three and Four, must have sat at the beach.
Yeah,
some learning lessons, I think, for the Edmonton Oilers in terms of putting the pedal down. You know, you've got an opportunity here, an amazing opportunity, to put a skate to the throat of your arch rival in the first Battle of Alberta since 1991. Are you going to go out and grab it, or are you going to let them dictate?
Frank Cervalli, our guest. So which controversial goalie collision garnered the right amount of outrage? Was it the Lucic on Smith or Kadri on Binnington?
Neither. I mean, here's my honest opinion on what happened with both. One, in the Binnington Kadri one, if it was JT Compher that had run into Binnington instead of Nazem Kadri, we never talk about it again. We shrug and we say that's really unfortunate for Jordan Binnington. Guy had played so well, you know, came in to take over for Husso and had really stolen the show and turned back the clock to 2019 and had shown us why he was a Stanley Cup champion and was able to win a Game 7 on the road. And, you know, when you look at the Milan Lucic one, like, it actually felt like there was a bit of embellishment from Smith. Like, does anyone honestly think that if Milan Lucic was trying to plant Mike Smith that he wouldn't have been in the third row?
Yeah.
Like, that's the truth. That's what Daryl Sutter had mentioned in his post game. I just think he held up. He let up. Smith, you know, sort of saw him coming, knew what was happening, sold it really well, and his helmet popped off. And unfortunately, he sold it so well that he had to go off for the concussion spotter because they saw his helmet go flying.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that we spent as much time today, you know, on stations and TV networks around the country talking about these two hits as much as we have.
Well, I mean, and especially when I think the only reason the officials upheld the 5-minute major in a game misconduct, well, maybe because, you know, partly because of, you know, Smith being injured, it was game management. Exactly. Maybe because Smith is hurt. The other part, game management. Just want to get him off the game. It was a decided affair anyways. Now, the Kadri stuff, there's so many layers to it. I mean, I honestly think the water bottle thing's kind of funny. I mean, that's just one of those things that kind of happens or whatever. But obviously the death threats to Kadri are just so offside. And then because of the world we live in now, because there's so much more attention to these things, like Craig Berube, when he was asked about it, just saying no comment, like in today's society, just saying no comment to those things doesn't seem to be good enough, does it?
Not good enough, and not nearly enough for someone who has also previously been fined or suspended for using racist language in an NHL game. It's sad. It's really, like, that's where I'm at, is I can't believe that it's May 23rd, 2022, and this is what we're still dealing with in our sport. Why is it that, you know, if there's some controversial play that happens, you know, in the NFL or NBA or something like that, I don't hear those stories. Like, I don't hear about, you know, a player needing extra security and police presence and protection because of things that have been sent his way and things that he's heard. It's not just the death threats. It's the racist and racial language. Like, I can't wrap my brain around it. I can't believe that there wouldn't be more, you know, especially from, you know, you mentioned Craig Berube and just everyone involved. Like, you know, they had a chance to really tone that situation down, and instead it felt like they riled it up a little bit by saying, oh, you know, his reputation, this is, you know, they believe that's really what it was, a guy that's, you know, out headhunting their goalie for someone that's been suspended a couple times in playoff games because he's played on the edge with his intensity. I just, all of those things aside, whether he meant to do it or not, whether he, you know, went to go run over Binnington and knock him out of the series, doesn't matter. You know, it's unacceptable. And you know, for all the things that we have to be celebrating, you know, our game and how special these playoffs have been and what we're seeing on a night in and night out basis, it actually breaks my heart that that's what we're talking about, you know, today, that's what we have to deal with. And that's what Nazem Kadri has to deal with. And a lot of other people and players that, frankly, just don't end up making the news, that, you know, they have to live with it and deal with it on a daily basis.
Yeah, really well said. It's so unfortunate. And of course, you know, none of Kadri's history really should come into that conversation, because as you mentioned earlier, you know, the play, it's a playoff kind of play. You're going hard for a loose puck trying to score a goal. And we've seen it 1,000 times, but when it's Nazem Kadri, we just look at it a little bit differently. Frank Saravalli, our guest here on Canuck Central. The Tampa Bay Lightning, I mean, man, have they really quieted the best offense during the regular season. It's kind of incredible, and we kind of talked about this during the Leaf series, but if Vasilevsky wakes up, watch out, and he's been absolutely lights out since that Game 6 overtime against Toronto. And on top of that, like, you know, Andrew Brunet calling out his team pretty much. Florida just hasn't played all that well. They don't play, I hate to use the intangible word, but like they don't seem to be playing with the same heart that the Lightning are, to borrow from Andrew Brunette.
It's hard to envision, hard to imagine. Like I especially with the way they fought a bit in the first round. Like, you know, you saw the comeback Cats, you know, as off as they look at times, they found a way to put it together and piece it together when they needed it most against the Caps. And perhaps maybe the simple answer is that they're being outclassed against the Lightning, and that, you know, this Tampa team, they're not going to be fazed by anything. Vasilevsky's been Conn Smythe worthy, all those things. They're doing it without Braden Point, by the way. And, you know, there's a big push tonight for the Lightning, who have played a ton of playoff games over the years, to get a week's worth of rest, maybe, if they can knock off the Panthers in four straight. There seemed to be a little kerfluffle today on on social media about a report that was stating that some of the Florida Panthers players were out visiting and
yes.
And extracurricular activities that they may or may not have enjoyed in Tampa. I don't know what the answer is there. I haven't dug in. But, you know, something has seemed off about this Florida team. We had lots of questions about would their game translate to the playoffs. You know, I knew that they wouldn't, and I think everyone knew they wouldn't be able to score this way in the playoffs. But I didn't think it would be so dramatic. And I also didn't think that, you know, defensively they would have, you know, probably given as much up as they have. So it's hard to figure out with a team this talented how you're three games in and you have three total goals. I can't figure.
Now, before we let you go, Frank, we'll ask you about the Canucks at the very end. But as far as coaching around the National Hockey League, I know Winnipeg and Barry Trotz, that's been a link, of course. And, you know, Philly has some interest and they have an opening as well. What's the sense you're getting? What's the latest you think here on the coaching landscape around the league?
Well, it's a Barry Trotz sweepstakes. Like, he's got sort of every team in the league that has a vacancy eating out of the palm of his hand. And he's going to be a very, very well-paid individual. It's not just Winnipeg. It's not just Philly. It's also the Vegas Golden Knights. The Detroit Red Wings have all been in touch. I believe there was an exploratory conversation today between Trotz and the Dallas Stars. I wonder what happens in Boston with Bruce Cassidy after that decided non-vote of confidence from Cam Neely, their president of hockey ops, as they were closing up their locker room for the summer. And the coaching carousel is beginning to spin. There's a number of coaches that are over at the World Championships as they're winding down that would like to get back in the mix. And I think there's been lots of chatter over there. But it's starting to heat up a little bit. I would say, though, the intel I have on Trotz is there doesn't seem to be any rush that unless, you know, someone is stepping up to knock his socks off with an offer that he can't refuse, that I think his preference is to try and take his time a little bit and make sure that he gets it right, because I think there's also a management component to it that he'd like mm-hmm. to consider, or a front office, future front office part of it that he'd like to also have in the works.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Barry Trotz. Now, in Vancouver, Boudreau is back. They made the announcement that Scott Walker is not coming back as an assistant, and some of the coaches, some other changes with the coaching staff. Is it, for the first time in a while, is it kind of quiet around Vancouver, or do you expect us to see any extension talks or any other additions talks over the next week or so?
I think it's pretty quiet. And I did poke around a little bit to ask whether the way things came together with Boudreau, was there any chance that the Canucks had given an option year in addition to the one that he's, you know, sort of already signed for? And the answer was no. This is a pure entering the last year of his deal, and we'll see what happens from there. So sort of interesting on that front that there wasn't any sort of movement one way or the other, and I guess decided to come to terms and go with the deal that he originally had hammered out really not that long ago when they made the coaching change.
Frank, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy Alberta.
Thank you, guys. Take care. Have a good night.
There's Frank Saravalli. He joins us every Monday here on Canucks Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Quickly, bet on hockey like never before with Play Now Sports, your local BC sportsbook. Two games on the go tonight. Tampa Bay Lightning and Florida Panthers. Of course, Florida on the brink of elimination, on the brink of being swept by their Floridian rivals. And then later on tonight, the Blues and Colorado Avalanche. We'll see how that series continues after a pretty wild weekend and a lot of feelings coming out after what happened with Kadri and Binnington in that game three on Saturday. But Sats, do you think tonight's the night that Tampa Bay moves through to the Eastern Conference Final again?
Ooh, I mean, Florida might be playing really guilty tonight, right? with them going out and partying it up really late. I mean, listen, the series is over. Even if Florida wins the game, you know, Tampa should win. I had Tampa winning this round anyways to come up. So I hope Tampa finishes it off. But for a single game, I wonder if the Florida Panthers took a page out of the John Tortorella book and will be super, super guilty tonight.
Yeah, playing guilty, as Frank Saravalli, we alluded to there just a little bit earlier. That series has been wild to see how it completely, I think coming into it at playnow.com, the Lightning were actually the underdogs going into the series. Now that has obviously changed. Lightning are 180 on the money line tonight to close that out. Panthers getting a little bit of juice there at 205. We'll take a look at some of the other matchups coming up later on in the show. It is Canuck Central.